Continuing Helen Wright's book, If Mary Baker Eddy's Manual Were Obeyed.
On the same day, she wrote to William B. Johnson, member of the board of directors and clerk of the church, a letter which indicated the direction in which God was moving her. Quote, "Drop all further movements towards chartering a church in Boston!" Exclamation point. "God is not pleased with this movement that has been forced on me to attempt. Let there first be a church of Christ in reality and in the hearts of men before one is organized." Unquote. When the church members and the board of the newly formed second organization asked Mrs. Eddy to provide them with specific written rules for governing their church, they were, in effect, acknowledging Mrs. Eddy's supreme authority and were relinquishing their independent democratic status. They adopted a theocratic spiritual government, with Mrs. Eddy occupying the unquestioned position of leader. They reorganized under her jurisdiction. Manual, page 18. Had the manual been obeyed and all centralized control terminated at Mrs. Eddy's passing, the branch churches could have gone forward, as we've already noted her words, free of the thraldom of man-made laws, free to rise into spiritual latitudes where the law of love is the only bond of union. This would have drawn all mankind to the doors of our branch churches and societies. The Church of 1879 to 1889 had been chartered under the law of the land like any other organized church. The great difference between that church and the 1892 Reformed Church was that it was not so chartered or incorporated. Like St. Paul, Mrs. Eddy chided her students, "But now, after that ye have known God, or rather are known of God, how turn ye again to the weak and beggarly elements, whereunto ye desire again to be in bondage? Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free, and be not entangled again in the yoke of bondage." Galatians 4. It is necessary to distinguish between her warnings regarding reorganizing materially and her actual achievement of demonstrating church free from organic or ecclesiastical control, free to go forward with the law of love as the only bond of union. Students insist on reorganizing materially. When, after all her trenchant warnings, her students still insisted on reorganizing, Mrs. Eddy, recognizing that a Judas is necessary as a type to uncover evil, for evil must be uncovered in order to bring out or prove truth, she reluctantly assented, saying, "God tests us all, tries us on our weakest points. Hers, the church's, has always been to yield to the influence of man and not God. Now let her pass on to her last experience, and the sooner the better. When we will not learn in any other way, this is God's order of teaching us. His rod alone will do it. It is only a question of time when God shall reveal his rod and show the plan of battle. Error, left to itself, accumulates." Unquote. Mrs. Eddy was aware that all too many preferred to turn spiritual affairs over to the custody of others. All too many found the stimulus of pageantry more exciting than seeking truth in solitude. She saw also that a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Only God's correcting rod would have an influence. The past 80 years have witnessed God's correcting rod as the prosperity of the once worldwide flourishing Christian Science movement has almost ground to a halt due to disobeying the manual. But Mary Baker Eddy, God's immortal scribe, will be vindicated. Her church manual, impelled by a power not one's own, has temporarily become the stone which the builders rejected, only to become the head of the corner in the eternity that awaits it. Board fails to recognize Mary Baker Eddy as leader. Apparently, almost from the beginning, the board of directors little understood and never really accepted Mary Baker Eddy as their forever leader. They saw her as merely a personal leader whom they themselves would one day replace. Their attitude clearly resembled that of Judge Clarkson, a prominent Christian Scientist, regarding whom Mrs. Eddy's faithful secretary, Calvin Fry, on December 7, 1900, 10 years before her passing, made the following entry in his diary. Judge Clarkson dined with Mrs. Eddy today, and after dinner tried to convince her again that she was mistaken and the cause was going to ruin, and the men were essential to take the lead of the cause of Christian Science and to assert their right without her dictation. It is pertinent also to recall Mrs. Eddy's remarks about William G. Nixon, who held a high position in the movement, and whose attitude was characteristic of the times. Artist Gilman records that she spoke of Nixon's unwillingness to obey her implicitly, that, quote, he felt it beneath him to obey her because she was a woman. He would, she said, declare himself ready to obey God in whatever he might require of him, but to obey a woman, bah, unquote. Then she added, we understand God and are ready to obey him only so far as we understand and are ready to obey his highest representative in mortal life. Our love for God and consequent willingness to obey him is never greater than our love for and willingness to obey his highest demonstrator, unquote. With few exceptions among those in highest authority, Pastor Emeritus, instead of having the meaning of the Christ consciousness of Mary Baker Eddy, was to them simply an honorary title which she had suggested they bestow upon her, and which they then felt could be dropped when she was no longer present. For 13 years after her passing, the board kept her name off the list of officers in the manual. Mrs. Eddy continually warned that the most dangerous error to students lies in not seeing error, in being insensible to the presence of error, that error must be detected and destroyed, or Christian Science is of little value. So it was that a spiritually unenlightened board was able to usurp power and authority over the movement in direct violation of Mrs. Eddy's instruction in the church manual. The misrepresentation and burying of Mrs. Eddy began with this unlawful, planned, and treacherous assumption of authority and power. It quickly turned her design for a church of self-government, where the law of love is the only bond of unity, into a religious oligarchy. In her divinity course, Mrs. Eddy admonished, "The churches and the students must be secondary to the example of Jesus, and if he were here personally, to his call upon his students, watch with me. Had they watched with him 1 hour or 1 year, and so saved losing him, you can see where the history of Christianity would be today, and how many years it will take to recover that lost opportunity. Demonstration, healing the sick, and helping your leader is needed more than all things else at this date. Unspoken influences are mentally at work to keep you and all my students from doing either of these duties aforenamed." Unquote. Five-member board balks, fears termination. The five-member board, dating from 1902, carried on greatly enlarged activities beyond the scope of the deed of trust of September 1, 1892. But it was completely subject to Mrs. Eddy's approval or consent. An account by Mrs. Mabel Brill, secretary to Bicknell Young, a Christian Science teacher and lecturer, has been preserved by the Carpenter Foundation. Mrs. Brill's account reveals that the five-member board was fully aware of the precarious situation Mrs. Eddy's manual provisions posed for them, and their positions when she would no longer be present to fulfill the requirements of the bylaws. Mrs. Brill states the directors made repeated attempts to have Mrs. Eddy either delete those bylaws or write additional bylaws, transferring her authority to the board when she was no longer here. The following letter from John V. Dittamore, who was one of the Boston Board of Directors at that time, shows how they were able to secure legal opinion to override Mary Baker Eddy's God-dictated bylaws, bylaws that were impelled by a power not one's own. March 13, 1929. Dear Mrs. Stubgen, upon Mrs. Eddy's decease, the members of the Board of Directors, acting up to their highest sense of right at the time, secured legal opinions from two of the most able lawyers in Massachusetts and one in New Hampshire. They all took the legal view that the law requires no one to attempt an impossibility, and therefore that the directors should conserve the property of the church by continuing the direction of its affairs without the handwritten consent of the leader provided in the bylaws. None of us at that time recognized the evolutionary system of government requiring dissolution and reconstruction at the beginning of each new period of discovery and leadership. There being no legal challenge to the directors, there was nothing to hinder them carrying out the advice given by counsel. Had the position been challenged at that time, there is little doubt but that the whole history of the Christian Science movement would have been different. These events occurred almost 18 years ago and are not all very clear in my mind except in a general way. So far as the practical situation is concerned, Christian Science is on the verge of a rebirth, and the next few months will impel a reevaluation of the whole subject. Sincerely yours, signed, John V. Dittamore. Mrs. Eddy points out that decisions by vote of church councils as to what should and should not be considered holy writ show how a mortal and material sense stole into the divine record. Revelation 22, 18 and 19 show that the desecration of holy writ is placed under a perpetual curse. Every loyal Christian Scientist acknowledges the writings of Mary Baker Eddy to be holy writ. This includes her manual, of which she said, "Every bylaw in the manual is inspired. I did not write them any more than I wrote Science and Health." What right would five mortals have to override that which was impelled by a power not one's own? In other words, holy writ. Mrs. Eddy's 13 Deeds of Trust enforce estoppels. Let the reader consider the following evidence and determine if there has not been a flagrant violation of trust. When it was decided in 1903 to build the extension, it was necessary for Mrs. Eddy to buy 13 parcels of land to accommodate the project. In this connection, she signed 13 Deeds of Trust. It is interesting to note that even though by 1903 Mrs. Eddy had instituted the five-man board under her control, these 13 deeds were all to the original four-man board, which is incontrovertible evidence that the five-member board was temporary and would serve only as long as she was in full control. These deeds carried the stipulation that, quote, "This property is conveyed on the further trusts that no new tenet or manual bylaw shall be adopted, nor any tenet or bylaw amended or annulled by the grantees," unquote. See manual pages 136 to 138. These pages record the fourth deed in this series of 13 deeds, in which Mrs. Eddy conveyed the land to the directors. The deeds for the property that Mrs. Eddy purchased over a period of time, and which were reconveyed to the four legal, self-perpetuating directors of the First Church of Christ Scientist, Boston, each contained the following condition, quote, "In addition to the trusts contained in said deed of September 1, 1892, from Mary Baker G. Eddy, this property is conveyed on the further trusts that no new tenet or bylaw shall be adopted, nor any tenet or bylaw amended or annulled by the grantees, unless the written consent of said Mary Baker G. Eddy, the author of the textbook Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, be given therefore." The above is again unquestionable legal proof that Mrs. Eddy provided for the termination of the five ecclesiastical, quote, Mother Church, unquote, directors, since the 13 deeds were all given to the legally established four-member board. The manual terminated ecclesiastical five-member board obviously wished to remain in office and were able to obtain legal opinion to sustain their human intent. The bringing to light of Mrs. Eddy's 13 deeds of trust, so long hidden, is further assurance of Jesus' promise, "There is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, and hid that shall not be known." God, divine love, intends that this error shall be uncovered and rectified. To this end, divine love inevitably works through those in whom it finds the least resistance to its great spiritual plan of ultimate freedom for all humanity. Mary Baker Eddy's manual, Obeyed, places within the individual infinite spiritual consciousness of each member of her church, church here meaning the structure of truth and love, the Immanuel. This is fulfilled, the God with us, Immanuel prophecy of true government, self-government, without the necessity of Savior, Manuel, which Mrs. Eddy said she had hoped would never be needed. Miscellany, page 229. But her manual stands for all eternity to guard the liberty of every Christian Scientist, along with her admonition, "Christian Scientists, be a law unto yourselves." Here she releases each consciousness to Immanuel government, the government of the kingdom of God within you. The passing of Stephen A. Chase in 1912. When board member Stephen A. Chase passed on in 1912, the remaining directors could not fill the vacancy without amending and annulling the bylaw that required Mrs. Eddy's consent and approval. When they did disobediently fill the vacancy, they breached each one of their 13 deeds of trust. They therefore were henceforth an illegal board, and Mrs. Eddy's great plan for divine spiritual self-government for her church members was sacrificed on the altar of mortal mind's lust to control. From that moment, the dynamic divine impellent, which had so wonderfully propelled our movement to worldwide recognition, began to wane. Today, our churches are nearly empty. Many are closing. Only an exposure and a rectification of the disobedience to the manual will reverse this dire trend. The 10th manual, in 1899, began carrying a double estoppel clause concerning the filling of a vacancy on the board of directors. It read, "Directors, Section 4, the Christian Science Board of Directors of this church shall not fill a vacancy occurring on that board except the candidate is approved by the pastor emeritus and the remaining members of the board. This bylaw can neither be amended nor annulled except by consent of Mrs. Eddy, the pastor emeritus." From this we can see that Mrs. Eddy remained in control, even though up until 1902 she was dealing with the four-member board, which had been legally established in 1892 as a perpetual body. But in 1903, the 28th manual, we have the first mention of the five-member board, which was to be a temporary ecclesiastical board that would remain only so long as she was present to supervise it. Error must be uncovered. Mrs. Eddy taught her students, "Error wants to be let alone, but we are not going to let it alone. Error says, don't talk about me, talk about God." But unless animal magnetism is exposed by Christian Scientists, she told her followers, the world will be little benefited by Christian Science. And in our textbook, she states, a knowledge of error and its operations must precede that understanding of truth that destroys error. Later, in Miscellany, she wrote, "Our cause is growing apace under the present persecution thereof. This is a crucial hour in which the coward and the hypocrite come to the surface to pass off, while the loyal at heart and the worker in the spirit of truth are rising to the zenith of success. The well done, good and faithful, spoken by our Master. Mary Baker Eddy may not in 1866 have had the full vision of how to make known to humanity her great revelation and discovery, but an unquenchable fire burned in her heart, an unequivocal love for God and man, and God used that ineffable, ineffaceable love as an anvil on which to shape and reshape her course in the direction divine love wanted her to proceed. Illegal board secures perpetual copyright. After gaining control, the board deftly, systematically proceeded with long-range plans to perpetually imprison science and health through copyright extensions. This they were able to do through unethical means and skillful, but again deceptive, legal maneuvering. First, the copyright on science and health was illegally extended in 1934. This in spite of the fact that Mrs. Eddy herself had never copyrighted the vital, momentous changes she made between 1906 and 1910, signifying her intention to leave the last edition uncopyrighted. Finally, in 1971, these probate court-appointed illegal trustees, under the will of Mary Baker Eddy, petitioned the Congress of the United States for a copyright extension. The fraudulent statements they made to mislead the senators, representatives, congressional librarian, and others showed the length they were willing to go to betray Mrs. Eddy, their professed leader. For instance, it was conveyed to the House Committee on the Judiciary Subcommittee No. 3 by the representatives of the trustees, alias the Christian Science Board of Directors, that it was necessary to extend the copyright on the 1906 edition of Science and Health because Christian scientists were dependent on its precise wording, pagination, and line numbering for use in church services. This was completely untrue. The 1906 edition is only found in rare collections. It has not been for sale in Christian Science reading rooms since 1907. Few Christian scientists have ever seen a 1906 Science and Health. No one could mark the week's lesson, or in the Christian Science terminology, get the lesson, using the current Christian Science Quarterly and the 1906 edition of Science and Health because the wording, pagination, and line numbering are so different from the 1910 edition. It is the uncopyrighted 1910 edition that has been used for the past 74 years, that is used in all Christian Science churches and by students to get the lesson. It is the 1910 edition alone that has been for sale in Christian Science reading rooms since 1910. Mrs. Eddy registered her last Science and Health copyright on October 19, 1906. At that time, Science and Health did not contain the many extremely important changes, additions, deletions, and clarifications which she made in the many editions that followed the 1906 copyrighted edition. Note, in these subsequent editions, Mrs. Eddy made many additions, deletions, modifications, refinements, and pagination changes, which she never registered. Neither did she present them for new copyright protection. Consequently, the last published edition of the textbook in worldwide use since 1910, at the time of Mrs. Eddy's passing, was never under copyright. Divine Love, the one mind, directed her to leave it safely in the public domain, for all humanity, for all time, and not in the hands of five mortals in Boston as their private property. A science doesn't need copywriting. Those many vital changes were never submitted to the Library of Congress in either the form of registration of changes or renewal of copyright. These facts indicate unmistakably that Mrs. Eddy carefully laid the groundwork between 1906 and 1910, so her final 1910 uncopyrighted edition could enter the public domain at the time of her passing. Of course, Congress had no way of distinguishing between reality and rhetoric, or between fact and fiction. The spokesmen for the church hierarchy carefully refrained from overloading the senators' circuits with facts. Instead, congressmen and senators alike were fed liberal amounts of misinformation and misleading data. This copyright bill, S-1866 as it was called, had been introduced into Congress in absolute secrecy. Christian scientists in the field knew nothing about it until it was virtually passed. The Board of Directors' homework had been well done and well timed. Congress, in 1971, contained a number of influential senators and congressmen who were members of the Christian Science, quote, Mother Church, unquote, as were also the number one and number two principals on the White House staff, and were all loyal to the Board of Directors' point of view. Thus, the bill was planted in a fertile field. Surely those government officials innocently urging its passage were little aware of the great evil they were promoting. The Christian Science Board of Directors, Clayton Byne Craig, Arthur P. Wuth, Mrs. Lenore D. Hanks, David E. Sleeper, and DeWitt John, for whose relief the bill was introduced, were granted a 75-year copyright extension on all 432 editions of Science and Health, in defiance of all world copyright agreements to which the United States is signatory. This Copyright Act gives the illegal 5-member Board of Directors, who were the same individuals as the trustees under the will, in effect, perpetual copyright, since at the end of the 75-year extension, they are permitted to renew. According to the copyright law called Private Law 92-60, each time a new edition is published in any language containing the notice by special act of Congress, it constitutes an additional 75 years of copyright from that date. Therefore, if an edition is published in 2046 containing the information by special act of Congress, it constitutes a further 75-year copyright from that date. Thus was the illegal Board of Directors, alias the probate court-appointed trustees, by a totally unconstitutional act of Congress, able to wrest from Mrs. Eddy the copyrights on all her editions of Science and Health forever. Perpetual ownership was given to 5 individuals in Boston by the special wording of Private Law 92-60. The illegal 5-member Board of Directors now has the rights of any copyright owner. In fact, it has more than the rights allowed by any other copyright law, in that it can make changes it desires in the textbook, and henceforth keep all editions of the textbook continually imprisoned and can legally stop its publication. Reading from pages 76 and 79, we learn of the courageous stand David James Nolan, president of the United Christian Scientists, took in challenging the unconstitutional copyright law secured by the church in 1971 that so adversely affected Christian Science. You may wish to refer to page 220 of the addendum of the book for Judge Jackson's decision regarding the court case. For a detailed account of the 1971 Copyright Act, see Helen Wright's book Mary Baker Eddy's Church Manual and Church Universal and Triumphant. It must be remembered that Mrs. Eddy had carefully laid the groundwork between 1906 and 1910, so her final 1910 uncopyrighted edition could enter the public domain at the time of her passing. Thinking Christian Scientists quickly saw that the imprisoning of the Christian Science textbook via copyright laws would be the cruelest and rankest error ever to be imposed on the intelligence of mankind. It would be cruel because this imprisonment of science and health would hide from hungering humanity its way of escape from the misery of sin, disease, and death. Science and health was virtually imprisoned because immediately after obtaining perpetual copyright, the Boston hierarchy withdrew Science and Health from all commercial bookstores worldwide, making it impossible to obtain a copy except by writing to Boston or through one of the fast-closing reading rooms. This unconstitutional private law, 92-60, violated Mrs. Eddy's stated wishes that Science and Health be given to all humanity. She did not copyright the last 14 editions of Science and Health because she saw she had perfected a science that is no more copyrightable than is the science of mathematics or the science of music. Illegal copyright action leaves harmful legacy. The granting of perpetual copyright to 5 individuals in Boston was an unscrupulous usurpation of legislative power. It was a sinister, unconstitutional act endangering the future religious freedom of Christian Scientists, indeed, of all Americans. It demonstrated an unprecedented disdain for the principle of religious freedom. The founding fathers of this nation wisely provided for the separation of church and state. Hundreds of years of cruel and bloody religious warfare in Europe led them to rule against the establishment of religion by the government and against interference in religion by the government. Because of this wise action of our founding fathers, America's religious institutions and the religious liberty of its people have flourished for over 200 years without government endorsement and without government intervention. Because of this religious liberty, Christian Science could be discovered and founded in this nation. Consider what is at stake and what has followed in the wake of this preemption of power by the government and by the violation of the fundamental rights of religious freedom in this decision to grant 5 individuals, alias the Christian Science Board of Directors, a perpetual copyright on the Christian Science textbook Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. We should not shut our eyes to the evil that is presently closing in on us. Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, taught, quote, "The notion that one is covering iniquity by asserting its nothingness is a fault of zealots, who, like Peter, sleep when the watcher bids them watch, and when the hour of trial comes would cut off somebody's ears. Such people say, 'Would you have me get out of a burning house or stay in it?' I would have you already out, and know that you are out. Also to remember the scripture concerning those who do evil that good may come, whose damnation is just." Unquote. It was an unhappy day when such an important piece of legislation, along with the opportunity to strike a decisive blow for the continuance of religious freedom, was scuttled via copyright laws by a few men who, in effect, voted to imprison forever the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. These few legislators made a mockery of the spirit and purpose of our Constitution, which guarantees religious freedom to all its citizens. Their actions to thwart religious liberty by driving a wedge that would break down the wall separating church and state must forever stand as a prime example of cowardice and selfishness. In the wake of this prejudicial action, the floodgates of evil have been opened. The first casualty is the rule of law, the essential element of American society that distinguishes us from dictatorship. The rule of law is what protects us from government tyranny and the suppression of ideas. In Christian Science, the natural law of harmony is the true logos, the divine reasoning, because it is the immutable law of God. The implementation of Mary Baker Eddy's divine discovery will dissolve the historical concept of man. At this period, we are struggling for the freedom of health, holiness, and the attainment of heaven. What did Mrs. Eddy see was important in this struggle? She divulged her secret to faithful Judge Hannah, because Hannah had seen and become convinced of Mrs. Eddy's place in scriptural prophecy. More and more responsibilities gravitated to his shoulders until in 1898 he asked Mrs. Eddy for permission to resign some of his offices. Mrs. Eddy responded by urging Judge Hannah to adopt a method of relief by taking certain hours each day for self-work, during which time he was not to be interrupted by anyone for any purpose. She told him that if she had not adopted such a course, she could never have accomplished her work. She urged, quote, "I ask you to keep a time for meditation every day. Ponder in thought your infinite, harmonious, Christ-expressing selfhood, and claim it as you. Drink in its perfection, its moral beauty, its integrity, worth, its unspeakable safety. All the truth and beauty of God's creation is yours and you. Enjoy it in sincere prayer and thanksgiving. Preserve your human sense of yourself rightly by dwelling in a definite treatment every day within the sanctity and integrity of your real selfhood. In that hour of prayer, discard all your sense of selfhood, all that is involved in the belief of birth, heredity, association, time, decay, death. By the grace and authority of God, close your thought firmly against the interference of mortal beliefs. Hold yourself open to the plan of God and closed to the plots of Satan. Rise into the spiritual forces of your own being and your destiny. This magnificent spiritual exercise of treating yourself in devoted prayer and praying for yourself will keep you in the secret place, which is unknown to the senses and open to all that heaven holds for you, and safe. The secret place of right understanding of yourself, himself reflected, is as safe as eternity." Unquote. This advice to Judge Hannah can help us today in taking the human footsteps leading to perfection, which Mrs. Eddy said are indispensable. The Bill of Rights, First Amendment. Returning to the freedom of religion, our Bill of Rights states, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." The price of any fanaticism can be extremely high. History has too many grim examples of suspicion and hate generated by those who want to impose their certainties on others. The opponents of religious freedom are today resorting to vicious, threatening, ignorant attacks. With terrorist attacks on America's legal institutions and on our law-abiding citizens. Because we are, as a whole, a pragmatic nation, our form of government has lasted. Alert citizens are today looking with horror on the fanaticism that would make zealotry a test for political acceptability, that would demand belief in a particular religious doctrine requisite to the securing of a judicial appointment. Wisely, the framers of our great Constitution wrote in Article 6, "No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States." Note, Mrs. Eddy saw that the First Amendment freedoms were at the heart of our nation. In People's Idea of God, Mrs. Eddy speaks highly of nobly sustaining our constitutional Bill of Rights, and in Message for 1901 she states that Christian Scientists ask to be allowed the rights of conscience and the protection of the constitutional laws of their land. We, as a nation, must be alert to the dangers of those who would try to use religion to attack the integrity and character of anyone who does not stand with them. Mankind will be God-governed in proportion as God's government becomes apparent, the golden rule utilized, and the rights of man and the liberty of conscience held sacred. Meanwhile, they who name the name of Christian Science will assist in the holding of crime in check, will aid in the ejection of error, will maintain law and order, and will cheerfully await the end, justice and judgment. That's from Miss Linney. Today, the highest offices in the land, aided and abetted by television hucksters masquerading as God's personal messengers, are being used as a pulpit to advance a single, cramped religious point of view, and are thus attempting to turn narrow religious dogma into official public policy. The need for the spiritual dimension is greater than ever in these turbulent times. All have a need for love, goodwill, warmth, faith and hope, of assurance and the comfort of belonging. For most of us, these values are focused in faith in God, but not enmity and hostility toward those who disagree. Recognizing that religious liberty has never been under more direct attack than it is today, let us, in these troubled times, do what we can to defend our most cherished constitutional ideals, those ideals which promote religious freedom. Let us help promote a positive vision where a society of diversity can generate values that will enhance the quality of life for everyone. This can best be done by refusing to be intimidated and by taking a stand to preserve our constitutional liberties, the most precious of which is religious liberty and the separation of church and state. We must turn from emotionalism to a sound morality through which, as our leader teaches, we recognize those evils that threaten human freedom. We must today rise to defend the rights of man. The liberty of conscience must be held sacred. This can best be done through gaining a sense of reality by which we can discern the will of the one mind, the true and real mind of all. It was misconceptions regarding the wooden horse and the determination of the Greeks that caused the fall of Troy. Misconceptions regarding the human reality and the will of God governed the false prophets when they proclaimed to Judah and trumpeted abroad, "Peace, peace," when there was no peace. Yet the only force that can defeat us is ourselves. We defeat ourselves if we allow ourselves to be blinded by animal magnetism and its determination to have us mistake unreality for reality. The founding fathers of this nation knew that the price of seeking to force our beliefs on others is that those others might someday acquire the power to force their beliefs on us. To assure our own freedom, we must allow others the same freedom. Fortunately, a good part of this nation understands, if only instinctively, that the idea of God favoring the establishment of a state church is wrong and dangerous. Most citizens are not pleased at seeing religion trivialized by its appearance in political throwaway pamphlets with which the nation is today inundated. Today, as never before, we are experiencing a threat to privacy. Privacy that, as a Supreme Court justice once pronounced, is the most comprehensive of rights and the most valued by civilized men. America's history is rife with countless episodes of religious discrimination, persecution, and prejudice against unpopular religions. Still, America's tradition of religious liberty is the envy of the world. Today, however, more than at any time in the past 200 years, our liberty is threatened. Not since 1791, the year the Bill of Rights was ratified by the colonies, has the principle of religious liberty been so endangered within our society, and its authority as law so questioned within our government. No better example of this trend can be found than in the passage of Private Law 92-60. when the Christian Science Board of Directors prevailed in their quest to gain perpetual copyright ownership of all editions of Science and Health, the floodgates of evil were opened. There followed, in the wake of this action, a serious erosion of government committed to church-state separation. A deadly blow was dealt to the First Amendment provision that Congress shall make no law endangering the religious liberty of Americans. But in Christian Science, there is a higher law at work which shows that evil finally falls, pierced by its own sword. The principle of all power is God, and God is love. Whatever brings into human thought or action an element opposed to love is never requisite, never a necessity, and is not sanctioned by the law of God, the law of love. Had all peoples one mind, peace would reign. That's from Miscellany. At this juncture in history, Christian scientists would do well to remember Mrs. Eddy's counsel that Christian scientists do not close their eyes to evil. They should also be encouraged by her text, page 570, line 18 of Science and Health, written to console and hearten her followers after her departure. Quote, "What if the old dragon should send forth a new flood to drown the Christ idea? He can neither drown your voice with its roar, nor again sink the world into the deep waters of chaos and old night. In this age, the earth will help the woman. The spiritual idea will be understood." Unquote.